This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. It is June 26th, 2019. Welcome to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch, who is out riding her bicycle on the Cape today. Very nice. She does an annual event called the Plymouth to Provincetown Ride. So they ride from Plymouth, Massachusetts, all the way out to Provincetown, and then they take a ferry back. And Fran's got a great day for it. She already sent me over a picture of her laying down by the painted on the pavement "Welcome to the Cape." It's somebody painted it with spray paint, and she always takes a picture there. It's kind of a classic. So anyway, hope Fran's having a good time. Anyway, this is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show and you're listening live, you can, well, no, you really can't call me because I'm here all by myself. But you can email me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. And if you're listening to this on podcast, you can send an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com, or you can visit and comment at Bicycle Talk on Facebook. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. Ron's Rants of the Week. Okay, this one's personal. Are you ready? Very personal. Ticks. I don't like ticks. I don't like ticks because ticks give you Lyme disease, or at least they do up here in the New England area. Actually, lots of states, almost all states across the U.S. now are showing signs of Lyme disease. So guess who has it? I have it. I think I mentioned this in maybe a past episode. I am being treated for it. It is not going away. My knees are unhappy. It makes for uncomfortable cycling. Not a good thing. So ticks are definitely something we want to talk about, and I will talk about, but that's my rant. I'm mad at the ticks, those darn little critters that suck your blood and give you nasty diseases. So if you'd like to talk about your experience with Lyme disease or ticks or any tick-borne illness, you can discuss it on my Facebook page, Bicycle Talk, and let me know how you feel about this. On a positive side, we had an awesome trip this weekend up to the Mountain Laurels. You know, we are in northeastern Connecticut. It is gorgeous here this time of year. Everything's just popping out all over. It's beautiful. The flowers are out. The smells of summer are abound. It's just really, really wonderful. And we got to the Mountain Laurel Sanctuary up in Union, Connecticut this past weekend. There were 18 of us. Nice ride. Nice group ride. Everyone was just incredible. I have to say, we have a very, very good group of riders here. Everyone was well behaved. We brought some people in from outside of the area. Shout out to Tony and Chris, who showed up for their first experience on one of my rides to the Mount Laurels, which was really cool. Really nice to have them along. Hope they can come back the next time. And if you want to experience what it's like to ride out here in northeastern Connecticut, I highly recommend that you check out Ride with GPS. That's RIDEWITHGPS.com. Go there and check it out, and then do a search for the username Peddlin' Ron, PEDLINRON. That's me. Hey, I make a lot of rides, and I share them publicly. So if you're ever traveling to northeastern Connecticut and you're looking for a place to ride your bike, these are signature roads. They're gorgeous. It's so nice around here. You might want to check that out. Once again, Ride with GPS, username Peddlin' Ron. The Maintenance Minute. All right, seeing as it's so timely for everything that's going on here, I decided that the thing that I wanted to touch base on here was tick check. Okay, I know there's a lot of you that get out and you ride your bicycles in the woods on your mountain bike, and you know, you're subjecting yourself to the you know, the bugs that are about, and you might find that it would be a really good idea to do a little bit of preventive maintenance here on your legs. First of all, first and foremost, I believe that I know that I'm going to get some objections on this, especially from the mountain bike people, because mountain bike people aren't as big on this particular action as the road bike people are, but shave your legs, man. Shave your legs, clean them up. Clean them up real good. Once that those little hairs that you have all over your legs, the ticks will just grab right onto them. And the next thing you know, you're going to be dealing with the same thing that I'm dealing with. And believe me, it is worth preventing. Don't go there. Now, if you're not real happy about doing that sort of thing, I get it. I totally get it. Although I have been told by some that it's very sexy. So we'll just, you know, we'll let you guys like, you know, we'll let you mill over that idea. But the other thing you can do is, and probably the best way to prevent Lyme disease and other awful tick-borne illnesses is to keep them from sinking their insect fangs into your vulnerable flesh in the first place, right? There you go. That means you need to wear insect repellent. Stuff with a 20% DEET works best. You can also wipe down with, you can get these DEET wipes, 30% DEET wipes, and avoid contacting with, avoid contact in bushy areas where ticks hang out and latch onto passerbys. The other thing, the big one that we see around here in New England is tall grass, tall weeds, anything like that, because ticks don't particularly care for the heat. And so if you have a very short mowed lawn, you have less problems with ticks in your lawn because the heat of the lawn will keep the ticks away because the grass is really short. But if the grass is really tall, or if you're out riding your bike, your cross bike, your mountain bike in the woods, and you're riding along and you have to happen to go through a field or you know, a meadow of some kind, you are just asking for those little buggers to grab onto you and take a bite. So we want to keep the bloodsuckers away from you. We want to keep you healthy and keep you fit all summer long and keep you away from these darn things. By the way, they don't just go away at the end of the summer. They stick around. So I would say that tick checks and putting some sort of DEET on your legs is probably a pretty good idea. And I know DEET doesn't sound like a good idea because it's a chemical and it's nasty and all that. But let me tell you, the other end of this, it's not good. It really isn't. You can have lots of problems with your joints. You can have problems with your performance. You can have problems with your mind when you get tick-borne diseases. It's just really, really not a pleasant thing at all. So preventive maintenance. Perform a thorough tick check to catch any of the wretched plague beasts that may have hitched a ride on you before they find a nice place to feed. So those are, they can crawl around and they generally start down low and then they work their way up. So be real careful. They like, places on your body where there is a lot of hair. They can hide in there. That's a nice little place for them to hang out. And so you gotta really, really check yourself carefully. The first thing I do if I've been out and playing in the outdoors and dealing with this sort of thing, I generally will run right into the shower right away. And then I use a like kind of a scrubby thing with lots of soap, and I really scrub away on my legs to try to get anything that might have latched on off. So that's a good thing. You can also use a tall cycling sock if you want to. You know, something that comes up to the bottom of your knee, that'll help. But they will attach on that too because they're going to grab onto it because it's textured and it's easy for them to grab onto. I also, if you're against the idea of putting DEET on your skin, another thing you can do is you can take those socks and you can put the DEET onto the socks. That way you have less skin contact with the DEET, and that will keep you protected and also keep you protected at the same time. So that's a beautiful thing. So there's just a lot of things you need to watch out for. I'm actually pulling some of this information off from our friend at Bicycling Magazine, Celine Yeager, and she wrote this article about, you know, making sure that you take care of all these things. Check for ticks every hour. You can wait until you're done with your activity, but only about an hour or so, any longer. And if you're deep in the woods and brushing against vegetation, you should scan for them every hour or so. When you return home, leave your gear outside a while, preferably out in the sun, because once again, the ticks don't like the hot sun. Once your gear is off, the thermal and carbon dioxide signature, which tells the tick there's a mammal that can provide a meal, is gone and the tick will leave. Excuse me. Then put your clothing in the dryer on high for at least 30 minutes. Ticks need moisture to survive, so the dryer will kill them. So that's what you do after you shed your clothes. Shower up, take a long hot shower, possibly wash off any ticks that may be crawling around on you. Being in the shower also give you a better chance of that any might getting rid of any that might still be on your skin. And double check the tick hangouts. Okay, ticks prefer dark, moist areas, so be sure to check those particular areas on your body carefully. They include skin folds, underarms, groin area, and behind the knees, as well as where your clothing is tight, such as along the waist. Also check in your hair, along the nape of your neck, and on your scalp. Use a mirror after you shower to check your back areas that you can't see well. Or, you know, if you have a partner or a friend that can do that for you, sometimes tick checks are fun. I'll leave it at that. Anyway, that's what I would recommend for you to do as far as ticks go. You want to be really, really careful of these things. I am not well right now because of this. It's really very, very unpleasant, and I highly recommend that you do not try to do this. This is not a fun thing. So that's my maintenance minute, tick checks. I know it was long, but it's worthwhile. You want to protect yourself from ticks. So kind of a cool thing is that I get, occasionally I will get a message from someone who is listening to the show. And one of the cool things that I got is I got a message from a listener by the name of Lena. And Lena was listening to the show, and she really enjoys the show. Thank you very much, Lena. And she's relatively new in bike commuting, and she was actually out. She managed to bike to work every day last winter. It was on the milder side, but there were a few negative temp days and a handful of snowy commutes. Well, Lena, you just got a proverbial tip of Pedal and Ron cycling cap for doing that. It's really, really great you can do that. So she's made it a goal of hers to get more people to adopt a low carbon free commuting idea. And she thinks it's a great topic, and she'd like to pass along tips and tricks to listeners about how easy and fun year-round bike commuting is. And she says, even as a complete biking newbie, it's possible. And anyway, so I looked at a few things here. I wanted to see what we could find that would work for maybe giving some positive comments here. So I checked this out, and this is from Our Streets, which is a website, Our Streets, mpls.org. And this is a little piece here that was written by Francis Stevenson on July 2nd, 2018. And it's called, Does Bike Commuting Impact Your Carbon Footprint and by How Much? So many bike commuters cite reducing carbon emissions as their reason for biking. Does switching from a car or bus to a bike reduce one's carbon footprint and by how much? Japan, China, the Netherlands, and Denmark collect the most data on carbon emissions and bikeable cities. These countries have large cities with bike infrastructure utilized by a good portion of their populations. So the Institute of Transportation and Development Policy, cited by Streets blog, studied how biking could reduce carbon emissions by a substantial amount. Currently, bikes and e-bikes make up 6% of miles traveled in world cities. Just 6% in world cities. That's a little sad, but still good. But thinking of some of the cities over in Europe that really are strong and into this, it's still a small number. I wish it was higher. If by 2050, bikes and e-bikes were to make up 14% of the travel in world cities, there would be an overall 11% reduction in carbon emissions. So there, the statistics that we see here, these focus on world community and carbon emissions. And if you take a look at a car, the CO2 released per kilometer driven per person, 271 grams. Wow, per kilometer, that's a lot. And then the CO2 released during the production of the vehicle, 313 grams. Wow, those are big numbers. The bus will actually be a little bit less because it's carrying more people. So if you take a look at per person, it brings it down. And the bus will actually release 101 grams per kilometer. And the bicycle, this is the best part. It's great. 16 grams carbon CO2 released per kilometer. And this is from the fuel of the rider, food. So that's where that comes from. And during the production of the vehicle itself, 16 grams. So if you take a bus or car out of the equation, the carbon emissions drop dramatically. To produce a bike produces on average 5 grams of CO2 per kilometer ridden. Bikes do not require fuel in the same sense of cars and buses, so the ride does not release any more carbon emissions. Food intake and the energy it produces to help a cyclist propel their bike is the final piece of the bicycle commute carbon footprint. Cyclists on the average European diet will add 16 grams of CO2 per kilometer ridden. The amount of CO2 released changes based on the cyclist's diet. In particular, meat has a very high carbon footprint. So if you're a vegetarian, your carbon footprint is going to be even a little bit lower. The comparison of CO2 released during the production and per kilometer is 313 grams of CO2 for a car and 16 for a bike. This presents a pretty clear picture that commuting with a bike reduces the individual's carbon footprint significantly. So, if you are starting to become concerned about all the talk about climate change and about CO2 and about your carbon footprint, and you want to take a good look at what you can do to help do your little part about taking care of the carbon footprint situation that we have right now, get out on your bike more. So, and I'm not talking about, you know, going out and recreational ride, although going for a recreational ride is far better than going for a drive in the car. So we will give you credit there. That's for sure. That's definitely a good thing. But I'm talking about, you know, I got to go down to the store and grab a couple of things. And, you know, the store is 3 miles away, or maybe it's 5 miles away. I'm going to ride my bike. And, you know, you can always outfit another bicycle, like an older bike with a rack on the back that you could put panniers on, or they make these really cool things that I used to sell in the bicycle shop called grocery store panniers. And you could do something like that too. And that's exactly what they are. They're grocery bag panniers are what they are. So they open up about the size of a grocery bag, or will hold a grocery bag. And you can just clip them off the bike, off the rack, walk inside your store, go around, do your shopping, go to the checkout, and then refill them with the food that you just bought, and then ride back home. And they're wonderful. They make a lot of sense. They make a whole bunch of sense. And you're riding your bike instead of driving the car. And if you figure that as, you know, if you take a look at that footprint that and those numbers that we looked at earlier, gosh, what a huge difference. So 313 grams of carbon for a car per kilometer. Okay, so let's call it a 5K ride. So it'll be a 3 mile distance. All right, 3 miles of distance, 313 grams. My God, you're almost up to 1,000 grams of CO2 by driving the car in one direction, and then you turn it around and you drive it back, and now you're getting closer to 1,800, almost 2,000. Grams of carbon. So your carbon footprint's huge with the vehicle. Whereas on your bicycle, you're doing 16 grams of carbon, let's say. So you're doing 48 grams one direction, 48 grams the other direction, 100 grams total to ride your bicycle back and forth versus almost 2,000. That's a pretty big difference, and that's certainly food for thought. And when you're going to buy your food. So that is definitely a very, very good thing. So does riding your bicycle and bike commuting impact your carbon footprint? Absolutely. And it matters. It matters a lot. So let's get a little more conscious of this, pay attention, and see, you know, what we can do to take care of our carbon footprint. So I got another thing on my list here as we move into the racing season a little bit deeper. Big shout out, first of all, to my friends Jeremy and Jed for last week being on with Marginal Groans, the podcast that they are doing on bicycle racing. And if you're interested in local bicycle racing, definitely want to check them out. Remember, it's Marginal Groans. And they're very funny, and they were a really good time, and we will see them back because we just had a blast, and just talking about bike racing and bikes in general, and you know, bike stuff. That's what we do. It's bicycle talk. So back to the racing scene. We just got through the Tour of Switzerland, and there was there were some highlights there. There were some crashes. There are some people that are no longer going to be racing in the Tour de France because of it. But we do have some interesting results here. We are looking at lots of interesting names that well, some that we know, some that we don't. We got Bernal Gomez, who was first, and he 27 hours, 43 minutes and 10 seconds. Right behind him, Dennis Rohan from France. No, is he from France? No, he's from Great Britain. 19 seconds behind. That's amazing. And this is the Tour of Switzerland. The Tour of Switzerland, by the way, if you're not a bicycle racing enthusiast and you don't follow it super closely, or you just follow the Tour de France, it's a big lead up to the Tour de France. So a lot of people will do this race just to kind of, you know, check the engine, make sure it's working okay, that sort of thing. Let's see here. We've got... our fastest sprinter was Peter Sagan, so apparently Peter's got his legs all warmed up and ready to go for the Tour de France. We'll see what happens there because there are some changes in the Tour this year. There's definitely a lot of changes. And the final team results were the Movie Star team was first, and the team Ineos was second, team Sunweb was third, followed by Agritu, La Mondiale, and Astana Pro Team in fourth and fifth. So that's from the Tour of Switzerland. Results are in, and there were some things that happened during the Tour of Switzerland. There were some crashes. This is really big news because this was one of the favorites that was supposed to be doing really, really well for the Tour this year, and he crashed out in the Giro, and that's Tom Dumoulin is out, and he's going to miss the Tour de France this year due to fitness concerns. So we're kind of moving on to the Tour de France. He may have a knee injury after crashing in the fourth stage of the Giro, so it's not looking real good for Dumoulin right now unless something crazy happens in the next few days, because remember the Tour does start in early July, right after the 4th of July is when it starts. So we've got the big one, the big daddy of them all, the Tour de France, which is starting very, very soon. And we're anxiously awaiting to see what's going to happen here. But he is the second highest profile name to miss this year's Tour. Everybody knows the first one. That's Chris Froome. So Froome's out. Dumoulin's out. What's going to happen? I mean, really, where are we going to go with this? This could be a very surprising Tour de France because things are changing all the time between the crashes and other various things. Actually, it's both Chris Froome and Tom Dumoulin were out because of crashes. So Froome crashed hard while warming up first stage at the Criterium de Dauphiné in mid-June, breaking several bones and ending his season. Dumoulin, meanwhile, crashed out of the Giro in May. Thought he might have enough time to heal for the train for the tour, but after undergoing a surgery to remove a piece of gravel in his knee, he announced he would probably skip it. So it could be a very, very interesting tour. And then the other thing that's really interesting in the tour this year is that only two stages will end in field sprints. I like this idea. I like this idea a lot. Not a big, big believer in the big sprint finishes. And I know they're exciting. I know they're spectator friendly, but they're not rider friendly. And that's the key problem here, is that we've got this race that's going to last for 20 to 22 days. And we start all of these races with these really, really flat stages. And it's a big parade, and that part is really cool. But at the end, there are the crazy sprinters and the crazy sprints. Not to label sprinters as crazy, but you do have to have a little bit of a loose screw to be a good sprinter. That's just my opinion. But anyway, it gets a little touchy at the end, and touchy in a very physical way. People are bumping into one another, and these are professionals, and they know what they're doing, and they know how to bump into one another. But sometimes there's a screw up. Sometimes there's a wheel tap, and you know, a wheel tap at 40 miles an hour is a serious, serious problem, because it'll take you off your bike so fast you wouldn't even know what happened. It's kind of amazing how it works. So anyway, things are going to be a little bit different, given that the best field sprinters aren't starting the race. We're only expecting two stages, the first and the last, to end in full-out bunch sprints. Now, sprints will happen, but they'll be contested by a smaller, more selected group of riders who can either survive the climbs immediately before the run into the line or excel in many of the short uphill finishes in this year's tour. So it's going to be very, very interesting to watch. Mark Cavendish will win at least one of those sprints for sure. He's definitely a big deal. British rider. He took four stages in the 2016 tour, put him four away from tying Eddie Merckx's total record of 34. Imagine that, 34. Eddie, the legend. He's wonderful. But after he crashed out in 2017 and dropped out the following year, we're wondering if his best days were behind him. But now, according to this is a cut from Bicycling Magazine. It looks like he could be, his health is back again. He's showing small signs that his form could be returning. So we're just going to wait and see. There was a really cool rider last year, Alaphilippe, and he won the polka dot jersey and the green jersey last year. I don't know if you remember, Julian Alaphilippe. He won two stages and the polka dot jersey. But he's a Frenchman, and he's demonstrated he's more than just a climber. He can win races on all types of terrain, making him one of the sport's most exciting racers. Given his all-round ability and this year's course, there's thought that Alaphilippe will not only defend his King of the Mountain title, but will also take the green jersey as the winner of the points classification. It's a poorly kept secret that the Tour designs courses to favor riders it likes and thwart those that it doesn't. And this year's race suits Alaphilippe perfectly. He's French, of course, of course. Give him credit. I mean, the French put a lot of effort into this. It's a big deal. They should have a guy that, you know, can do well, a Frenchman that can do well. So it'll be nice to see that. Geraint Thomas, definitely someone to watch, and he's very, very talented. I think he's got a pretty good chance at it this year. There are some other players in there right now that are going to make it tough, but we'll see. We'll see. He may be just a one-hit tour wonder. You never really know. The other riders to look at is, we want to keep our eyes on the Colombians. The Colombians have always got good riders. They've always got great climbers. And with Froome out and Dumoulin out, and the whole atmosphere has changed dramatically. So there's going to be a lot of different things going on up in the hills, and we shall see what happens there. But the money right now is on Egan Bernal, who made his tour debut last year, and he's going to come to France again after missing the Giro due to a training crash. Probably a good idea that he missed it then. He won a prestigious Paris-Nice-Paris stage, the Paris-Nice stage, back in March, proving that he was a more completed rider by handling the windswept flats and individual time trial. More recently, he won the Tour de Switzerland and more important pre-tour contests, and is a good indicator that he will be riding his best come July. And in this mountainous tour, which plays right into Bernal's strengths. So if he falters, there's always Nairo Quintana. I have a soft spot for Nairo Quintana. I wish he would have a great tour. He just seems like he's there for a while, and then I don't know whether he burns out or blows up or what happens to Nairo. I just don't get it, because I'll tell you, I love watching him ride his bike. I got I have a thing about the way people look when they're on their bicycles, and he just looks like the bike is part of his body. He just looks really, really good on the bike. And unlike Mr. Chris Froome, who looks like he's trying to get away from his bike all the time. And I am not the only one to make that comment. I've heard that through a lot of commentators out there. They look and they go, how can that man ride his bicycle so fast when he looks like that on a bicycle? He doesn't look pretty on his bike. But Nairo, he looks great. He definitely, definitely looks great. So we'll see what happens. We don't know. There's definitely some players in there that are worth checking out. I think we will see. We will see some interesting results this year. It's not going to be the same old Tour de France as we saw in the past because of all the changes. And then the other one that we need to look at too is Thibaut Pinot. And you know, between him, Romain Bardet, Tom Dumoulin, you know, also sidelined, Chris Froome sidelined, there's going to be some good stuff going on here. This year's climb heavy route is packed with 7 climbs over 200 meters, and France could see its best chance of victory since Bernard Hinault last won the Tour in 1985. Wow, I'm getting old. I can't believe it was all the way back in 85. Amazing. So we're going to keep our eyes on Pinot and see what's going to happen with him. He's definitely in the running as far as that goes. I think he did fairly well in the Vuelta a España last year too. But this is going to be his 7th tour, which means he has experience. And he was third in 2014. He's hoping to put some of the bad luck that's followed him in the past few seasons with crashes and illnesses in the rearview mirror when he goes into the 2019 tour. So we'll see what happens with him. Anyway, there's just a lot of players out there. Tom Dumoulin is out. The Tour de France course. Oh, boy. Well, let's look at this part here first. I've got a few other things kicking around here. So the course this year, I have a stage by stage here, and the route from Brussels to Paris by way of the Pyrenees and the Alps is what has been dubbed the highest race in history. It's going to be a big mountainy race this year. And remember, this is the 6th through the 28th of July, so this will be the 106th edition of the Tour de France. Stage one will be they call it the Grand Départ, which is in Brussels this year, 194.5 kilometers, and it is flat. 61 years after Brussels' first Grand Départ, the Tour returns for a flat opening stage, which begins and ends in the Belgian capital by way of a loop south to Charleroi and west, and then a breakaway will likely be reeled in by the sprint teams with finishers like Caleb Iwan, the Lotto Soudal rider, and the Colombian Fernando Gaviria, who will be eyeing a victory on that. So, but it is flat. It is very, very flat. If you take a look at the profile, it's there is a Category 3 and Category 4 climb, but they're so short that they're just like little bumps. So they won't be terrible at all. But it is 194 kilometers, and there will be a big sprint at the end. Let's hope everybody keeps the rubber side down and the wind at their back, as I like to say. I can't, I almost don't like to watch the stages like that because they make me, they get me upset. Stage two, a 27.6 kilometer team time trial. Okay, so that's interesting because we have this big long stage, and then the next day it's a 27 kilometer time trial, team time trial. That should be really interesting. We'll see what happens, see who's got the best team this year as far as working together. And the stage is rolly, but not really. I wouldn't call it flat, but I would call it rolly. So I think it's going to be, it'll be fun. It'll be challenging. It should be a good time. And then stage three, Binche to Epernay, 215 kilometers, considered hilly. Okay, after 12 kilometers of its third stage, this 2019 tour will enter France for the first time. So we're going back to France on stage three. A flat day charging south is complicated by a lumpy finish with four categorized climbs to disrupt the race. This may entice riders like Julian Alaphilippe to get into the break and collect the King of the Mountain points. But if they're caught, then expect a quick but punchy rider like Peter Sagan or Michael Matthews to be involved in the finish. And that, basically, it looks amazingly flat for, 146 kilometers, almost 150, more than 150 kilometers. It's very, very rolly, very flat. And then we hit the first Category 4 climb, which is very short. It's only 1.1 kilometer, 6.8%. There it is followed by a Category 3 climb, which is just 900 meters at 10.5%, followed by a Category 3 climb and 1.8 kilometers at 6%. And it just has this like kind of roller coaster thing at the end, which is kind of interesting, all the way from kilometer 160 to, you know, the to 215, basically. So that'll be interesting. It'll be kind of a fun thing to watch, and we can see what happens there. Stage four is yet another 213 kilometer flat stage, and it's a perfect setup for the sprinters. And so we're definitely going to see some crazy stuff going on there, I'm sure, unless the, you know, there's people that try to get away on it. But it is very flat, a couple little rollers on there. There's a category four climb here, 1 kilometer at 7%, not very long at all. There is another category four climb at 198 kilometers into this race of 213, and it is 3.2 kilometers at 5%. And that will be our stage four. Stage five, we're starting to push into the climbs here, and this is where things get very interesting. And that's kind of cool because it's stage five, so it's early into the race. I like this because it's going to start shaping the race up a little bit, and we'll see where it goes. But I see two Category 3s and two Category 2 climbs on this. So the first Category 3 is 3.4 kilometers at 4.9%. The next one is 5.9 kilometers at 5.9%. That's a Category 2. And then there's a following Category 2, which looks ugly, but I guess it's not that bad. 5 kilometers at 6.7%. Well, that could break some legs. That could definitely hurt. And then the last one is a Category 3 with 4.6 kilometers, 6.1%. And that is 156 kilometers in with a screaming downhill to 175-kilometer finish. So should be an interesting one. Again, we're going into the mountains on stage six, big mountains, category one climb in there, 10.8 kilometers at 5.4%. After you get over that, you have to do 1.3 kilometers at 9% at the top. Ugh, ouch, that's gotta hurt. And then it's just one giant roller coaster. There is a Category 1 climb between basically between 82 kilometers and 105 kilometers. It's 11 kilometers at 5.8%. It does not look pretty. And then the finish on this is a Category 1, and it's not listed here. That's interesting. My stat sheet is off here. No, this is it right here. Oh my goodness. So the last one is La Planche de Belle Filet. Okay. This is really hurting ugly. It starts at the base at 13%. It then backs off to 11% for quite a while, actually, for about 6 or 7 kilometers, or maybe a little longer than that. And then it continues to go up and hits a 20% wall, followed by a little 6%, or followed by a 24% finish. Ouch, that's going to hurt. That's just going to hurt. It averages 8.7% for the entire race. So that's stage six. Let's keep our eyes open for stage six. That's going to be a leg breaker. That could be a game changer right there. That could make a big difference. Stage seven, stage profile is again a couple of fours and a three, but very short. So nothing major there. 230 kilometers. Stage eight, we are going for 200 kilometers and hilly. And again, it's a giant roller coaster. I see four category two climbs and two category three climbs in this. Watch for stage eight. That could be very, very interesting. Stage nine, we are looking at 170 kilometers. Again, we're rolling in some hills. It's Saint-Étienne to Briod, and it's going to be, there's going to be some toughies in there. A couple of threes and a one. That one is, oh my God, 3.2 kilometers at 11%. Yep, that's a steep climb. That'll hurt. And then stage 10, we're going to 217 kilometers. It's rated as flat, but it looks like kind of roller coastery, but definitely starts high and ends low. So that one will be just kind of a little parade. And then stage 11, 167 kilometers, and it's pretty flat. It's got a lot of little rolls in it, but nothing really critical. So stage 12, back to the mountains, 209.5 kilometers, and it has two category ones. One is 7%, the other is at 7.5%. The first one at 7% is 13.2 kilometers. That's a lot of hurt. And the second one is 9.9 kilometers at 7.5%. So stage 13, it's, what did they call this one? A little lumpy is what they call it. Individual time trial, 27.2 miles. So yeah, it's got some rolls in it, but no categorized climbs, nothing like that. So it's just going to be hopefully a fun course. And it is 27.2 kilometers. And then stage 14, we're going back into the mountains, 117.5 kilometers, finishing at the Tourmalet, the infamous Tourmalet, which is always an exciting finish. The Tourmalet is 19 kilometers at 7.4%. So that's a nice way to finish a race, huh? But before you get there, you've got to go over the Col du Soleil, which is 11.9 kilometers at 7.8%. So there's going to be a little leg breaker there. Just kind of wind it up a little bit. Maybe that'll cause a short break, which will go screaming downhill to get to the bottom of the Tourmalet, and then the Tourmalet is the finishing 117.5 as far as that goes. And the Tourmalet, just so you understand, I mean, the stage profiles on this are great. If you go into, I'm looking at, this is a British magazine, the independent.co.uk, and you can check out their profile. Stage 15, back again to the mountains, three category ones, one category two. Yeah, it's all going to be tough. It's all going to be very, very tough with some major double-digit climbs on your way up on this, on the last of this too. And that finishes at the Foy Prat de Albis. So anyway, Stage 16. All right, what do we got here for a profile read? Some relief for weary legs as the peloton comes down from the mountains to take a more leisurely ride around the south of France. The flat finish into Nîmes, where the stage also starts, is tempting for any sprinters who survived the Pyrenees if their team can carry them to the front of the race. And so it's a start and finish at the same place. It's a big circuit, which is kind of cool. There is one category four, but it's so short, it's hardly worth looking at. And otherwise, it's 177 kilometers and pretty darn flat. And then stage 17, we are looking at, we're getting close here, 200 kilometers and hilly. Pont de Gard to Gap. Oh, Gap. Yeah, Gap's always been a good one, too. Kind of well-known climbs here. There is a Category 4 and a Category 3. The Gap is the Category 3 on this. Category 4 is the Côte de Rochette du Bois, and that is 2.3 kilometers at 6.2%. The Gap is 5.2 kilometers at 5.4%. If you guys or listeners out there, guys and gals that are listening and are paying attention to your computer, which may have the grades on it, you get a little better picture about what it is these folks are climbing over, because these are tough. These are all really, really tough. Tough climbs, tough day in the saddle for a lot of these folks, and it should be, you can really relate if you've been up climbs like that. Out here in eastern Connecticut, we don't have super long climbs, although we had some sizable climbs last weekend that went for a while. I think we went over 3,500 feet last weekend in 48 miles, 49 miles. So it was pretty good climbing. But we have a lot of punchy double-digit climbs. Double-digit meaning anything over 10%, 10% or over. And we got a lot of that stuff. And those are the ones that really, they really break your legs. And the worst ones are the double-digit starts. So you start out at like 12 or 15%, and then it mellows out at 6%, and it crushes you. It's not easy at all. Stage 18 is a 208 kilometer mountainous stage, and it is Embrun to Valior, and it is, oh boy, yep, this is a good one. This is a good one. It's got one Category 1 climb, one Category 3 climb, which is super short. The Category 1 is 9.3 kilometers at 7.5%. Then there's a Beyond Category climb. Love these. They're called HCs, or Beyond Category. And 14.1 kilometers at 7.3%. And then the second one is the Galibier. And the Galibier is also a very famous climb in the Tour de France, been around for years. It's 5.1%, but it's 23 kilometers. And then there's a screaming descent to the finish. So that should be a very exciting day. That's stage 18. We're going on to stage 19, 126 kilometers. Again, lots of mountains. Boy, they did throw a lot of mountains in this year. Shorter day, but still difficult, with the summit finish in Tignay, coming after the monstrous Col de Lisieux, the highest paved road in Europe. Oh, how about that? That sounds really good. Yeah, 2,700 meters. That's a 12.9 kilometer climb at 7.5%. It is Beyond Category, and there are also two Category 3s, a Category 2, and a Category 1 to finish that race off. Just ugly, nasty stuff. Really, really tough. Stage 20, still in the mountains, Albertville to Val Thorens, and 130 kilometers and mountainous. It's the final alpine stage, and another brutal one, and it is, it's got a 33.4 kilometer drag up to Val Thorens to finish once again above 2,000 meters for the third time in the Tour, something this has never been done before. This is a Tour de France that will be won in the clouds around the Alps. And if the yellow jersey can beat his rivals to Val Thorens, he will have clinched the race victory. So they're calling this stage 20 the kicker. This is the one that's really going to do it. Oh, I just looked at the ride profile. Yeah, it's not pretty at all. The last climb is 5.5% average, but it is 33.4 kilometers. That is a lot of climbing right there. There's also a Category 1 early, 19.9 kilometers at 6%, and there's a Category 2 that sits in there at 6.6 kilometers at 6.5%, right in the middle. And that's just before you drop all the way to the bottom to go up to the top of Val Thorens. So, the ride profiles are just painful to look at. And then, of course, stage 21, Rambouillet to the Champs-Élysées, 128 kilometers flat. It's the party lap. That's the one where they just kind of cruise in. There's a champagne bottle opened. It's pretty much determined who's won the tour at that point, as long as there's nothing terrible that happens. And that will be stage 21. And then, of course, the crazy sprints and criterium around the Champs-Élysées at the end, which is always a highlight. My sister called me from France. They were over in France, and they are not as connected to the bicycling thing as I am. And so she calls up and she says, "Ron, I got to tell you something." And I said, "What?" And she goes, "I'm in Paris." And I said, "Oh my God, it's the last day of the Tour de France." She goes, "I'm standing on the Champs-Élysées." She goes, "I cannot believe what's going on here." And I said, "Wait another hour and you're, I said, "Don't lose your spot. If you're right on the edge of the road, don't lose your spot. Hang on tight. And you're going to see like the most amazing thing." I was so, so envious. So anyway, that's the 2019 Tour de France. It starts in Belgium, in Brussels, and ends up in Paris. So that's what we're going to be looking at this year. And that will pretty much give you what we're looking at for our 2019 Tour de France. I wanted to go over it, go through all the different stages, and just kind of give you an idea what's going on. I have some other things which I'll be bringing up next week, because I am starting to run a little bit out of time here as we're getting towards the end of this broadcast. There are some interesting things that are going on in the bicycle business, including Giant Bicycles moving all of its manufacturing to Taiwan for obvious reasons. It's a tariff issue. And so they are going to be, they have substantial manufacturing facilities in Taiwan, and they will be moving it, all their manufacturing, over there and completely out of China for a while. So that's a big deal. That's going to make a big difference in a number of ways. Obviously, they're looking at it as being more economical to the consumer to move to Taiwan, where it's much more expensive to build the bicycles. But it would be even worse if they had to deal with the tariffs. So anyway, that's what's going on politically out there. One of the things going on there politically. Anyway. We're going to finish up here with events, and I'd like to just go over a few things. First of all, if you are interested in this bicycle racing thing, it gets, you know, I get all excited about it. I just do love the bike racing, and having Jeremy and Jed on last week got me all inspired. Not inspired enough, though, to go get a license. I just can't do it. I just don't have the speed I used to have. Nor the dedication to do that. But should you be interested in doing that, you can always check out the go to bikereg.com, and you can check and see what's going on in New England and or in your area if you're listening from another coast or wherever you're listening from. Check out the race scene, and you can check through USA Cycling also. They can tell you too. Another thing, if you are local and you're in the Connecticut area, the Tuesday night series is in Hartford, East Hartford. It is over at the football stadium, and there's completely flat course over there, blocked out so that cars can't get in. So it's very, very safe as far as that goes. Great place to learn how to race your bike. I had a conversation with a rider on our ride, a young woman on our ride the other day, and she said to me, "You know, I think I might want to try this bike racing thing." So I said, "Great." And fortunately, I had a woman on the ride who is a friend of mine who is who I introduced to her and said she races, talked to her, on and on. And then I also spent a little bit of time just bumping her and showing her what it's like to get bumped. If you've never been bumped by someone who knows what they're doing, it's a really, really important drill. You got to learn how to touch hands, touch elbows, touch shoulders, and not freak out. And if you are unable to do that or find someone that can do that with you, you really need to search that person out, because that's the way you learn how to get comfortable in the pack, and that's how you become much safer when you're in the pack. But anyway, there is a training series, Tuesday night series in East Hartford. You can check it out both at the New England Bicycle Racing Association, that would be nebra.us, or at Bike Reg. And that is put on by the Connecticut Cycling Advancement Program. So check that out. Click on the calendar page, see what you can find. A Friday, July 19th, 2019, to Sunday, July 21st, at the Center for Latino Progress in Hartford is putting on a League of American Bicyclists instructor seminar. If you want to learn more about teaching people how to ride bikes and do it the safe way and the accredited way, you can go to a League cycling instructor seminar. You can check out more about that with the at the Center for Latino Progress in Hartford, or you can go to bikewalkct.org. It's .org, pretty sure it is. Anyway, the George Street Challenge for Major Taylor. I have a podcast that I had just started listening to, and I got to finish listening to it. Someone sent it over to me and said, you need to listen to this. This is so cool. Someone did a really cool podcast on it. As soon as I finish listening to it, I'll post it on the Facebook page so others can check it out too. Okay, so Major Taylor is a big deal, was a big deal, and the Worcester Hill Climb is set for July 28th, and it's the last Sunday in July. It's a George Street Bike Challenge for Major Taylor. It's an uphill time trial on a wicked steep street in Worcester, Mass., and it is super steep, where young Major Taylor proved himself back in the 1890s. On that same date, our local bike club here, the Thread City Cyclers, putting on the Thread City Century. That would be Sunday, July 28th, 2019. All rides start and finish at Garrison Park in Chaplin, Connecticut. There's a 102, an 84, a 66, and a 43-mile ride. If you want to know more about it, you can go to threadcitycyclers.com, and you can check it out on their website, and they have a flyer there. Fran and I will be off to Asheville, North Carolina this weekend for the second Farm to Fork Fondo. First time in Asheville. We're really excited to go down there. Should be a really good time. Can't wait. So that's where we will be this weekend. And then Saturday, August 17th, another heads up that's coming up in the future, the Steeplechase Bike Tour, which is something I've been involved with for a very long time. Steeplechase Bike and Walk. So it's Saturday, August 17th, 2019, and there is a 100-mile tour. There's a 62.5-mile tour. There's a 50-mile tour, a 35-mile tour, a 20-mile tour, and a 5-mile walk. So, and remember, this actually, and in 1995, an extended version of the 20-mile ride, which was actually 28 miles, was listed in 1995's Best Short Bike Rides in New England. So, cool stuff coming up. Definitely something to look at in the future. And so mark your calendars. Keep listening to the show. We really appreciate it. My name is Pedlin Ron, and you have been listening to Bicycle Talk. This is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you've been listening to this live or on podcast and you'd like to comment, you can send me an email, bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can also listen to more past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show or be on the show as a guest, send me an email, bicycletalk1@gmail.com. This is Pedal and Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores. Thanks so much for listening.